This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, three tasks to accomplish this hour. The Bucks are a win away from the NBA Finals, from winning the NBA Finals, that is. How they got it done the other night. Plus, some good audio from a couple of Bucks players we'll get to. But the other two tasks I want to try to accomplish this hour. Ranking quarterbacks in each division in the NFL. Which teams have the best quarterbacks of their division? And I've been teasing it all afternoon. We'll get to it later on, but a tradition that needs to stop in baseball. And we'll get to that coming up in a little bit as well. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They've been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing. And in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, General Manager at Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. I went out to the Battery game Saturday as they took on Hartford Athletic. And it was, I spent one half. I was like a president at the Army-Navy game. I spent one half on the Battery side. I spent the other half on the Hartford side. Of course, there really was no Hartford side. It wasn't like Hartford Athletic had fans that traveled to the game. But it was fun. Now, it was hot. It was real hot. And if we have a member of the Charleston Battery on the show this week, we'll have to talk about it. I went to their home openers, much more comfortable. But I went on Saturday. You look around, people were just sweating. Sitting there. I mean, they looked like they were playing in the game. It looked like the Battery's bench, right, when you looked into the stands. It was so hot and muggy and humid, I could only imagine what it was like for those guys playing out there. Now, you play 90 minutes, you go 45 minutes straight in the first half. Soccer has very few subs. Halftime isn't even all that long. It's obviously a lot of running. I mean, my goodness. I was sweating just watching the game. I could only imagine running around. It was 86% humidity, felt like 90 degrees on Saturday. But it was a great night. It was muggy. It was a little sweaty, but it was a great night, and it was a big win for the Battery. They beat Hartford 3-1, and I was satisfied. You know, I was rooting for the Battery. That's my team these days, so I got to pull for them. I'm from the Hartford area originally. You know, I always love my roots, but hey, I'm a Charleston Battery guy now, so I was happy with the win. They got a big win 3-1, and you know what? I think in large part because I was there, really, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't want to take all the credit, but you know, I think it was my presence at the stadium that helped them score the three goals and win. Because their offense, offensively, they were on point. Saturday night, big win. A lot of fun. And I was like, you know, like in the movie Chinatown. My daughter, my sister, my daughter, my sister. I didn't know who to root for, but I was pulling for the Battery. They got the big win. By the way, Chinatown is a classic film. I don't think that's a movie that could be made these days. In part because of that scene. Also, it obviously couldn't be made by the same guy because, you know, we have since found out terrible things about Roman Polanski, and that was his movie. And then the woman, the actress, in that scene who was getting abused by Jack Nicholson to get the information out of her, she later went on to Oprah and talked about how her father was abusive when she grew up. So I don't know if they'd want to put that actress in that scene again, but it is a classic film from 45 years ago. And that was me the other night, though. I didn't know who to root for. Charleston and Hartford. I decided on Charleston, and they got the big win. I think that was why. I think if I was rooting for Hartford, they probably would have won. Right? I don't want to take all the credit, but probably most of the credit, I think, is deserved. You know, because I decided to go to the game, and then I was rooting for Charleston, and I think that's the reason why they won. I think that was the main reason why they won. So, big win for the Battery on Saturday, and you're welcome. Beating Hartford. The Bucks won Game 5 of the NBA Finals, and we'll get to that coming up. But first, you know, the big topic today, forget the Bucks on the brink of an NBA championship. Forget that SEC media days have begun today, that college football is rapidly approaching. Forget that the first couple weeks of the college football season could be very intriguing. Forget whatever happened in baseball over the weekend with the Braves' bullpen imploding once again. Forget all of that. Because the big story of the day has actually been a potential handicap match we may have right here in our very own parking lot, getting Bobby in the ring against Jim and Super Dave. And you can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. We have to go to the phones because we have Super Dave with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
Okay, how you doing, Mr. Luke?
I'm doing well. What's up?
17 more days, and we got pro football, a little taste.
Yes, Hall the Hall of Fame game. That's right. We're down to 17 days.
Pittsburgh.
Yes, how about that?
Yeah, that'd be a good game. I'm rooting for Pittsburgh.
Do you think Pittsburgh's quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, do you think he even plays in the game?
I doubt it. This is preseason, but it don't matter. The whistle blows again. I look forward to Kim French coming back on, like on Wednesdays in the old day, and tell it about the new rules, regulations, blah, 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 changes.
Yeah.
Sport, you know that, yeah. It ain't like cheerleading, which is not a sport to me. So, you know, all it is hip, hooray, and all, you know, sis, boom, bah.
Yeah. So, was that a subtle jab at your wrestling opponent?
Wrestling opponent.
Yeah. You're gonna get into the ring with Bobby?
You know, if the money's raised up, but Bobby's got news for you. It's not about you. It's going to be about not the Ronald McDonald House, but it's going to be about the Blind Veterans local chapter. So there, it's going for that.
Oh, well, I think that should be what's on the line. If Bobby wins, right, you should be wrestling for the charity. If Bobby wins, then it goes to his charity. If you beat Bobby, then you get to have the money go to the charity of your choice. That's what it should be.
Well, it should be that way, but he's saying everything should go to that Ronald McDonald House.
Well, then you just got to get in that ring and beat him.
See, Mr. Luke, my parents, when I was born, I had club feet. We went to the Ronald McDonald House when I was little.
Yeah.
And my parents was refused help getting the equipment that I needed so I can walk. And ever since then, I did not care for the charity. So my charity's going to the blind veterans.
Well, I think you just got to get in that ring then. You got to beat the money out of them.
Well, that ain't the point. The point, if it was on YouTube, it would make money.
Yes. So that's why we have to make this happen. What would be your big move in the ring? Who would you be?
I can't reveal nothing like that.
Oh, okay, that's true. Good point.
I was a Green Beret from 72-74.
Oh, okay.
I was special weapons and tactics. I know judo, karate. I could hurt the man. But, you know, we'll see what kind of plan of tactics. And I got to train. So I ain't going to take this lightly.
Uh-huh.
He thinks I'm blind and stupid. I'm not. I got sense enough to know Jim's going to help me. If it ain't the ring, it will be a mat.
That's right.
Bob's going to have a surprise on his behind.
Okay.
And it's going to be tactics, and it's going to be about counterattack.
Yes.
So, you know, cheerleading ain't a sport. Give me a break. It's about, like, pro football and Dallas cheerleaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the less they wear or get by is better. You know, so
would you be a dirty fighter? Would you do like groin stuff or pull hair?
No, I'm not that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, by the way,
yeah,
Mr. Luke.
Yeah,
my new name is Daredevil.
There you go. Perfect. That'll be your wrestling name. You'll be Daredevil. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dave, what's going to be your entrance theme?
Either Karate Kid, or because he was blinded in a match, I believe, with one of the bad guys. Blinded him or something, and then he came back and kicked his butt. Remember that? He blew salt in his eye.
Oh, yes, of course. Classic move.
Yeah, or Rocky IV.
Uh-huh.
Rocky IV to get the crowd going.
Oh, okay.
Which song from Rocky IV?
Just the movie. He just wants the movie.
The main theme song.
Oh, okay.
Uh-oh. Guess who's here?
Oh, we need his theme music.
One thing he's got to raise $50,000.
Oh, yeah.
Before I do it.
Yes.
Bob,
so,
it's not going
that
for
part.
The Ronald McDonald.
Well, we're
going
to try to do our part. We're going to get quite the campaign together.
It's not going to be that hard. You insulted college wrestling was not a sport. I'm going to raise an
$50,000 is what you got to raise.
We're working on it.
We're working on it. Just started it. But
okay.
The Army's being put together. You insulted a college sport, wrestling, and you go find out Greco-Roman wrestling is not something you insult.
I'll go and Dan Gable on your ass. Hush up.
Don't tell me to shut up. I break your arms. Just, Ben, give me a break.
Well, Super Dave, we can't wait for it. I got to be honest, Super Dave, I think you have to work on your promos a little bit, but I'm looking forward to this match whenever it happens. We will get this money raised, and we will have this match take place.
Now, who's going to be the announce team?
Well, I'll be happy to volunteer to do it.
Something tells me it's going to be you and Scott Eisberg.
Oh, that would be perfect. I'm all for it. I would have a Joey Styles type of announcing back from my ECW days. Like, everything would be so over the top. I would be screaming for anything. Super Dave could trip over the rope, and I'd be going ballistic like, you know, like it was a walk-off home run or something. Anything that happens in this match, I am going to sell it to death, you know, even if it looks like they're wrestling underwater. I can't wait for it to happen. And we're going to have to raise this money first. So, you know, we're getting our team on it. We have to create a GoFundMe page, and we have to donate all your life savings. Your kid's college fund, forget it. Your kid, he doesn't need to go to college. You send that money to this GoFundMe page we're going to have to create so we can have this match happen. Because what is more important, your kid graduating from college or having one heck of a day watching a wrestling match between Bobby, Super Dave, and Jim, right? I mean, come on. Pros and cons. That's much more valuable than 4 years of college and spending thousands of dollars. So you take that college tuition and you send it whoever needs to get this money so we can make this match happen. And we'll have Super Dave come out. Now, he's going, it makes sense. He's got to have the Daredevil. I don't know what Daredevil's theme was. I don't know if they even had like a theme. That movie I thought was pretty awful, to be honest with you. The movie they made about 15 years ago with Ben Affleck, I thought it was a pretty lousy movie. But Daredevil, that's the perfect person for Super Dave to be based off of as he makes his way to the ring. And we'll get this handicap match off and rolling, Bobby against Jim and Super Dave with money on the line. And the way it should be set up, whoever wins, that it goes to their charity. Then you really got some skin in the game, right? Then you really got something. I can't wait for this to happen.
But what if it ends up in a double count out, a double disqualification? Well, a time limit draw.
Then you split the money. Yeah, when all three are hunched over in the corner, you know, trying to catch their breath, then we'll just say, okay, we'll split the money. We'll give half to each charity. That's what we'll have to do. Forget football season. I'm more excited for this match to hopefully happen at some point.
And I know you'll want to raise some money to try to get NWA's Velvet Sky to come and do color commentator, you know, commentary with you.
Yeah, get them all. There's so many local wrestling ties in the area. You brought up a good point earlier. Joe mentioned that there's a training school for in the upstate from a former wrestler, Austin Idol. You know how great that would be? That would be a reality show in itself. If we put these three through wrestling training, you know, it's always about content these days, especially even for radio. We don't really do it around here, but a lot of it is like online content, post things on social media, different videos. That would be a great video series. Putting them through wrestling training leading up to the match. It'd be like Hard Knocks for HBO when they follow a team in training camp getting ready for the upcoming season. That'd be great. We got to work on that too. We could turn this into a real production. I would love to see that wrestling match happen. Hey, Game 5 of the NBA Finals happened on Saturday night. The Bucks got a win. First road win of the series. And what did it take for it to finally happen, for a road team to win for the first time in the series? It took the role players stepping up. We knew throughout this series, how come the home teams are always winning? Because these are teams that rely so much on those role players because they don't have multiple stars. And role players play better at home than on the road. So the role players of each team would always play better at home, and therefore the team would then go on and win the home games and lose on the road. But the other night in Phoenix, Milwaukee's role players came up in a big way. Jrue Holiday had 27, Middleton had 29, even Connaughton off the bench had, 14, and everybody chipped in and did their part. And plus-minus is a stat I like to look at, and it stood out for a couple of different reasons on each side. For the Bucks, it stood out because Giannis actually had a minus-7 on Saturday. The Bucks were outscored when Giannis was on the floor. How do they still win the game? Because their role players were that good. Drew Holiday was a plus 14. He was great on both ends of the floor. And the other way that the plus minus stood out to me was in relation to Chris Paul. We'll get to that in just a moment. But the road team finally won a game in this series because those role players stepped up. And none bigger than Drew Holiday, who was great on the offensive end, finally with 27 points, but came up with a big steal on the defensive end. And I gave you my list earlier where I know we can come in the next day and have big reactions and say, oh, that's the greatest play we've ever seen. And then the next game of the series gives us some crazy play and we'll say, actually, that's the greatest play we've ever seen. But that steal from Drew Holiday in Game 5 to help clinch the win, leading to the alley-oop for Giannis, the N1. The Bucks go up 3 at that point with 14 seconds left. Giannis goes to the foul line. That steal of Devin Booker when the Suns had a chance to take the lead and potentially get the winning basket at home. Final 25 seconds of the game. Game 5, where if you win Game 5, you win that series 72% of the time. That's what was on the line. Essentially, the series itself. And Drew Holiday comes up with the steal of Devin Booker, and then to finish it off with the alley-oop toss to Giannis for the and-one to seal a road victory. Huge play from Drew Holiday. Can I call it the biggest steal? No, but I would put it in the top five. And I gave you my top five list earlier. Gerald Henderson's steal of James Worthy in Game 2 of the 84 Finals, keeping the Celtics from falling down 2-0 in that series, and they would go on to win the series in 7 games. Michael Jordan stealing the ball from Karl Malone in Game 6 of the 98 Finals, leading to his eventual jumper over Byron Russell to win that game and therefore win the series that night. Then you had John Havlicek with the steal that wasn't in the NBA Finals back in 1965. It was the Eastern Conference Finals, but it sent the Celtics to the championship in which they would go on and win. So it helped them win the championship that year, but the steal itself was not in the NBA Finals. Then you also had the famous Larry Bird steal off the inbounds, and he saves it to Dennis Johnson, and they get the layup right on like the full court press. That was against the Pistons in 1987. That, too, was in the Eastern Conference Finals, not the NBA Finals, but the Celtics would lose the championship that year. So it was a big play. It was a great play. It's one that you probably remember if you're a basketball fan just by me talking about it. But it didn't impact the NBA champion that year. If the Bucks win in either Game 6 or 7, Drew Holiday's steal will certainly have impacted the champion because Game 5 is the big swing game. And what was the biggest play of Game 5? That steal from Drew Holiday. And Milwaukee, with the season on the line, made the big plays. They stepped up and made the big plays. Giannis had that great block on the alley-oop in Game 4. Drew Holiday had the big steal at the end of Game 5 that led to their own alley-oop to win that game. The Bucks are the ones making the big plays. On the flip side, the Suns, they're the ones that are kind of wilting. Right, they took a 2-0 lead. They had a chance in Game 4. Chris Paul turned it over. They had a 16-point lead in Game 5 at home, coughed it up. And when they had a chance to win at the final possession of Game 5, Devin Booker turned it over. The Suns, we throw this term around a lot, but I do think it's fair. The Suns are choking. You're up 2-0. You had a chance in Game 4, turned it over on the final possession. You had a chance in Game 5, turned it over. Not to mention the fact that you had a 16-point lead at home, Game 5, biggest game of the series. You coughed it up. But this is what has happened with Chris Paul teams over his career. He's a great player. He's had a great career. Great player everywhere he goes. Teams win to a certain extent, right? They overachieve to a certain point. He's in his first NBA Finals. But he is on the brink here of coughing up another 2-0 lead. And I shared the stat earlier that NBA teams in the history of the NBA playoffs, when teams take a 2-0 lead, they close out that series 90% of the time. So 9 out of 10 teams, when they go up 2-0, they're winning the series. For Chris Paul, in his career, when he takes a 2-0 lead in a playoff, it's about 60% of the time. Far worse than league average. In fact, he has the third worst winning percentage in NBA history in series when he's up 2-0. That's not good. And the reason why I think it happens, because there's been multiple teams, multiple years, maybe even multiple reasons, but overall, I compared it to the really like tense father who has the quick temper. And not that he'll get physical, but just yelling at you. You don't want to disappoint your father. You don't want to upset him. You don't want him to yell at you. You don't want the tense household. Right? Things get very awkward when after a parent scream at you. You try to avoid him afterwards. You don't want that to happen. And you know, if you grew up with a father like that, right, it was like the smallest thing could tick him off that he was going to start screaming at you. And Chris Paul has always been described as somebody who is respected but not liked. He's been criticized for his leadership capabilities, the way he leads, or how he is able or not able to lead a team. He's very demanding. He's tough to play with. That's why certain guys don't want to play with him. He can be very tough on you. And I think with a young team like Phoenix, where Chris Paul's a veteran and he's the quote-unquote leader and he's tough on these guys and he's trying to get his first championship, I think there's just that pressure, that tension for Phoenix, where when you try to be too perfect, right? You know that any little thing you do around the house is going to set your father off and you don't want him yelling at you. So by trying to keep him from getting upset, you actually make him upset unintentionally because you're screwing things up. You're trying to be too perfect. It leads to screw-ups. And I think that's Phoenix. If you look at this series, the number of turnovers they've had, especially in big moments, the 2-0 lead that they've already blown, choking now in Game 5. And for Phoenix, I think it's just a case of their leader, and you always take on your leader's style, right? The team represents the leader of the team. And Chris Paul can be really tough. He's like that tough father that you don't want to disappoint. You don't want to upset. You don't want to make mad. And sometimes by trying to be too perfect, you're actually having the opposite effect. You're screwing up. And I think that's what Phoenix has been doing while trying to play for Chris Paul this series. I think Milwaukee finishes out this series at home tomorrow night. It's the first time I've switched. I don't try to be a flip-flopper, but for the first time watching this series after that game, right? Like Phoenix started to make the comeback in the fourth quarter. In fact, let's start at the beginning of the game. Phoenix jumps out to a 16-point lead. I thought, oh yeah, that's right. Right, Phoenix, they're going to win this game at home. They're going to be just fine. Everyone was talking about momentum. All the Bucks have won back-to-back games. And I thought going into that game, yeah, but they're going back to Phoenix. And the home team keeps winning in this series. Right? If Phoenix wins game 5, they're fine. Because they're home game 7. And they jumped out to a 16-point lead, and I thought, yeah, this is exactly what I was expecting. The Phoenix, they were going to make a statement at home, win that game, take control of the series once again. Then they cough up that lead. And I thought, oh my God, the Suns are blowing this. And the Bucks had a big lead in the second half. But then as Milwaukee started to falter late in the game, I thought, okay, here we go. Right? Phoenix is at home. They got the home crowd behind them. Devin Booker, right? They're going to come back. They're going to finish this thing off. The Bucks looked terrible there for a few minutes. And then Devin Booker turned it over. Jrue Holiday came up with that big steal. Giannis gets the and-one. The Bucks get the win. And it was the first time at the end of that game, in fact, at that alley-oop. When that alley-oop happened, you knew, yeah, that's the game. And when that play happened, not only was that the game, but for the first time, I felt like, yep, that's the series. Bucks are winning. I do not think Phoenix can win the next two, even with Game 7 at home. I don't think they'll even get there. I think the Bucks win at home tomorrow night. Now, Jrue Holiday played great yesterday. Or I keep saying yesterday. It always feels like it's, you know, the game happened the night before. It was actually Game 5. Jrue Holiday was great. Here's what's interesting. Chris Middleton, this is from 3 years ago. Chris Middleton was asked on CBS Sports. Middleton was asked during the season 3 years ago, who is the most underrated player in the league? This was before Jrue Holiday came to Milwaukee. This was before Jrue Holiday was the hero of Game 5. Here's what Chris Middleton had to say 3 years ago.
For you, who might be the most underrated player in the league, aside from you, aside from your team, just out in the NBA, that maybe the casual fan doesn't understand how well they're playing, how dangerous they are night in, night out?
One I could think of off the top is Jrue Holiday. He's having a great season for the Pelicans. Against us a couple weeks at home, he gave us a nice 30 piece where he just dominated the game in the second half. A lot of us were worried about Anthony Davis, but on the other side, he was paying big numbers in a much needed win for them and us at the time. They ended up beating us at home. So I would have to go with Jrue Holiday.
How about that? 3 years ago, Middleton saying Jrue Holiday, the most underrated player in the league. Then they signed him this year, hoping he would be the big missing piece. Was not great in the postseason other than his defense on Chris Paul this series, but he came up big last night on both ends of the floor and made the big steal to help seal Game 5. Big play for Jrue Holiday, and Chris Middleton kind of saw it coming years in advance. And we're now one win away from Middleton bringing an NBA Finals here to the Lowcountry. Giannis had this clip. This was before Game 5. And I thought this is a little bit of a longer clip, but I think it's worth playing because I think it's a great quote. It's a great lesson from the Greek Freak. He was talking to the media prior to Game 5, and he had this to say, and then I thought that it played out perfectly in Game 5 of the Finals. This is Giannis. And by the way, keep in mind that this is his second language. He's like a 26-year-old speaking in his second language. He was asked a question, and this was Giannis' answer, which I thought was really interesting to hear.
Usually when... from my experience, right? Like when I think about like, oh yeah, I'm so great. I had 30, I had 25, 10 and 10, or whatever the case might be. Because right. You're going to think about that. Oh, we won this and that. Usually the next day you're going to suck.
Right.
You know, simple as that. You like the next few days you're going to be terrible. And I figured out like a mindset to have that like, when you focus on the past, that's your ego. I did this. You know, we were able to, you know, beat this team 4-0. I did this in the past. I won that in the past. Mm-hmm. And when I focus in the future, it's my pride. Like, yeah, next game five, I do this and this and this. Right. You know, I'm going down. That's your pride talking. Like, it doesn't happen. Like, you're right here. And I kind of, like, try to focus in the, you know, in the moment, in the present. And that's humility. That's being humble. That's not setting no expectation. That's going out there, enjoying the game, competing at a high level. And I think I've had people throughout my life that helped me with that. But that's a skill that I've tried to, like, kind of, how you say, kind of, like, perfect it. Master it. And it's been working so far.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to stop.
You're doing okay.
That was Giannis before Game 5. Now, it's a great thought from him, the fact that he's only, like, 26 years old, and then the fact that he can get that across in his second language. When Giannis first came to the NBA, he didn't speak great English. Then you hear him there, not only speaking well in English, perfectly, really, but giving a better answer than most, I think, 26-year-olds could about the question was something about, you know, handling past struggles to bounce back or something along those lines, and that's what he said. And I like that answer. Looking back, when you look back on things you've already accomplished, that's your ego. And when you're looking forward, expecting to accomplish things in the future, right, that could be a little like cockiness. You have to be a little more humble. So stay in the present and focus on what you're doing now. And that's what Giannis does. And he said that before Game 5. And then Game 5 played out, and it played out at the end just like what he said in that clip. He missed back-to-back free throws with about a minute to go. The free throws would have sealed the game. He missed them both. And instead of, you know, being down or pouting or being upset with himself or thinking, oh, no, I just blew the game or I blew the NBA Finals. Instead, a few possessions later, he gets that alley-oop and one that seals the win. Came right back. After two missed foul shots, he didn't hang his head or anything. As he said, he focuses on the present. He doesn't think about what he did in the past. Doesn't think about necessarily what he's going to do in the future, but what he's doing now. And eventually, he ended up having the big bucket on the back end of that great Jrue Holiday steal. I thought that clip was a nice little piece of advice, I guess. A good thought process, but also was fitting because he said that before Game 5, and then Game 5 kind of played out exactly like he said in that clip. Missed two big foul shots, and yet came back and made the big play on the alley-oop at the end of the game. Coming up, I teased these two things, so I have to pay off the tease. I have to be a good radio host. Coming up, we'll power rank quarterbacks by division in the NFL because you need to have a top two quarterback in your division to be a playoff team. Who fits that criteria? Plus, there's a tradition in the baseball world that needs to come to an end, and it doesn't even have to do with a team or a player or teams or players. It's about the fans. We'll get to that coming up. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Tulsa that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Put with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
What goes up must come down. Spinning wheel, got to go.
Coming up, how would you power rank the quarterbacks of each division in the NFL this year? the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You know, I was talking about the Bucks, one game away from winning the NBA championship last segment. And they'll be at home tomorrow night with a chance to do it. How much would you be willing to spend to be in the building to see your team finally win a championship? Say the Gamecocks are playing in the national championship. How much would you be willing to spend to be there in the building for it? You know, Clemson, they've won their national championship, so it may not be as big of a thrill. Milwaukee's trying to win their championship in 50 years. And I could tell you, for Milwaukee, the cheapest tickets right now where you would actually get a seat, $1,600. Not too bad. The most expensive tickets for Game 6 tomorrow night, $14,000. So tickets range from $1,600 to $14,000. If I had the money to spend, $1,600, you know, to be in there, see a championship, that's not too bad. It's not great, obviously. It's far more expensive than it should be, but you're talking about a once-in-a-lifetime, at least to this point, unless you're old enough to remember 50 years ago when they won, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You know, $1,600 if you are able, you know, if you got that money to spend. Not terrible. I've seen worse. But here's where it gets real bad. The standing room is $1,100 just to be in the building. $1,100. I think I have to have a seat, right? The $1,600, if I'm going to spend $1,600, I want an actual seat, pretty good seat. I'm in there now. Those are the cheapest tickets, so it's probably the last row in the building. So those probably aren't great seats either. But standing room is $1,100. Now, I have no problem with standing. In fact, a lot of times, depending on the venue, like when I go to the Battery, I like just standing over the little bar in the corner. I don't even like sitting down. I prefer standing. A lot of times, I like the standing room. But the problem, the Bucks with their standing room, they said you may not have a view of the court. So sure, you'll be in the building. I'm sure it's going to be a wild party. You could be part of it, but you may have to watch it on a TV. So would you be willing to spend $1,100 to be in the building, just to be in the building watching on TV or on the video board, right, to be able to see the Bucks finally win a championship? That, to me, would be too much. I'd say, no, I'd rather spend some of that money on some food, some beer, and watch the game at home. I'm not going to spend $1,100 just to be in the building. You tell me I can't see the court, but I'm in there? Yeah, no thanks. It's like the most expensive nightclub. I'm not paying a cover charge. I don't care. I'll go somewhere else. It's not that special. I don't need to be in the building when it happens. I'd rather be able to watch the game. And if I have to watch it on TV, I'll do it at home for free. The most somebody has ever spent on a clinching game was when the Cubs were on the way to finally win the World Series. And somebody paid $1.2 million for a ticket. That's the record. Would you ever spend $1.2 million? Obviously, this is a person who has money. They're probably not too concerned with spending $1 million. They have it to be spent. But the Cubs, we know about the 100-year drought and never saw a World Series, and you could be in there in the building to finally see your team win. Right, in a case like that, how much would you be willing to spend? Well, somebody apparently was willing to spend $1.2 mil. Now, I've never been to a clinching game. In fact, I've never been to any sort of championship game. The closest I got was the Eastern Conference Finals. I think it was the clinching game. LeBron in Boston scored like 40. He was dominant. I think it was the final game of the series. And the Cavs, he was on the Cavs at the time. Or was it the Heat? No, he was with the Heat. And the Heat beat the Celtics. That's the closest I've been. Final game of an Eastern Conference Finals. I've never been to an NBA Finals. I've never been to a World Series. Never been to a Stanley Cup game. Never been to a Super Bowl. If my Minnesota Vikings were in the Super Bowl, oh my goodness, right? And the only first time it's happened in 50 years, 55 years about. You know, if I had the money, certainly I'd be willing to spend whatever to be there. But I did have a friend, I think it was when the Red Sox won the World Series, I think 2013. Either 2013 or 2018. It was not 2004. And I had a buddy who went with his brother, and they spent, like, I think close to $1,000 to be there when they won the World Series. So for that, and I, at the time, I remember thinking, like, I don't know if I'd do that. You know, if it was 2004 and the Red Sox were breaking the curse, okay, that's a little different. Be there when they do it. Now, of course, they did it on the road. That's the other part. Not only does the team have to win a championship, but they have to do it at home. Milwaukee will have that chance tomorrow night, and some fans are going to spend, you know, $14,000 just to be there for it. How much would you be willing to spend if your team was about to win a championship for the first time? For me, really, the Vikings are that only team. The Red Sox have won the World Series. I'm a UConn fan growing up in Connecticut. They've won their championships. We lost our hockey team. Basketball, I'm not passionate enough about an NBA team. We grew up Knicks fans, but, you know, if the Knicks are in the NBA championship, I don't think I'd drop a ton of money to be there to see them win a championship. Vikings would be the only one in the Super Bowl. But Iowa would not be dropping $1.2 million like that Cubs fan did 5 years ago. Which teams have the best quarterbacks of their division? You know, you have to have probably a top two quarterback in your division to be a playoff team. Of course, there are always exceptions to every rule. Mitch Trubisky, I don't think, was a top two quarterback in the NFC North last year, but the Bears made the playoffs anyways. But typically, if you want to compete in your division, you can't have the third best quarterback. You certainly can't have the worst quarterback of your division. And the reason why I was thinking about this was because Jimmy Ward, who is a defensive back of the San Francisco 49ers, was on a podcast. This was on YouTube. I don't remember the name of the podcast, so forgive me. But he was asked about Matt Stafford, who, of course, the Rams just acquired. And Ward had this to say about Matt Stafford, the new quarterback of the L.A. Rams, when asked about one of his division rivals and quarterbacks.
He's the same quarterback that's been in the system in Detroit Lions and still didn't go to the playoffs. And you had Megatron. So it's like, what was the problem over there with Detroit? You going to blame the city? Like, what was the problem?
Yeah, he had a lot of time over there to win.
Is it the money? City don't have the money. If the city doesn't have enough money to bring players over there, why do they even have an NFL team?
That's a good point.
Oh, that's a big question mark. And so you went and traded Goff off, a Goff who went to playoffs several times and went to the Super Bowl? Yeah, he lost. Went to the Super Bowl, though. I'm yet to see that with Matt Stafford. And you want to just – and I'm saying he's still great staff. I believe he's a top 10 quarterback. I'm not going to lie. Maybe top five. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm just saying, I'm just going off of what I see.
Jimmy Ward, defensive back of the Niners, kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth. Because at the end, he says Stafford is a top 10, could be top five quarterback. But in the beginning, he was saying, you know, same guy in Detroit, yada, 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 as if he doesn't believe that Stafford can do much winning with the Rams or be that missing piece. So it got me thinking, how would you power rank the quarterbacks in each division? Because, again, you kind of have to have a top two quarterback. You have to be in the top half. So let's run through division by division, starting with the AFC East. How would I order the quarterbacks? Josh Allen is number one. Then it gets difficult after that. It's not a good division for quarterbacks. I think I would put a healthy Cam Newton number two. Then Tua three. I'm not sold on Tua. I did not like what I saw last year, although he may not have been healthy either. And then Zach Wilson fourth, because Zach Wilson's a rookie, but I also think he has the largest bust potential of all the rookie quarterbacks in this draft class. In the AFC North, again, this is a good quarterback division. I don't think it's a great quarterback division. I think all four of these quarterbacks are good. I wouldn't say any one of them are great, but I put Lamar Jackson number one. I do think Lamar is the best quarterback in the division overall, but certainly have concerns about him in big games or throwing situations, playing from behind. I still put Ben Roethlisberger at number two. I think he'll take a step back again this year as he gets older. And then I would actually put Joe Burrow three. We'll see what he's like coming off his injury. Nowadays, you know, ACLs, MCLs, it's nothing for these athletes. They come back better than ever before, so I'm not concerned about that. And Burrow's supposed to be ready for week one. But I liked what I saw from him last season. He's got some good weapons around him. And the reason why I put Baker Mayfield fourth is because the Browns are still at their best when Baker has to do as little as possible. So it's hard for me to rank him all that high when your own coach is trying to limit your exposure. They're trying to make it easy on you. They don't want to have to rely on you. So I think it's a good division of quarterbacks. I think all four are good quarterbacks. I don't know if any of them are great. And I put Baker Mayfield fourth. In the AFC South, this was another tricky one. I go with Ryan Tannehill number one. I was very much considering Trevor Lawrence, but I'll give Tannehill the benefit of the doubt. Trevor Lawrence has not played in the NFL. Tannehill has been a top 10 guy the last 3 years since getting to Tennessee. Top 10 in QBR. He's played statistically like a top 10 quarterback. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But I think by the end of the year, maybe even by midseason, we're talking about Trevor Lawrence as the best quarterback in that division. But if I had to pick today, I just haven't seen Trevor yet in the NFL. He's going to be a rookie. Jaguars are not one of the most talented teams, so I'll put Trevor Lawrence second behind Ryan Tannehill as of now. And a year from now when we're doing this, Trevor Lawrence will probably be number one. I then put Carson Wentz three, and I don't include Deshaun Watson. If Deshaun Watson didn't have his issues off the field, both with the law and the Texans, he would be number one in this division. But I don't include him because I don't think he plays for the Texans again. And so Tyrod Taylor slots in at number four in the AFC South. Big reason why the Texans are in big trouble this year. And then in the AFC West, obviously Patrick Mahomes is number one. And then I would put Justin Herbert number two because I think his ceiling is higher than Derek Carr. I do think Carr is underrated. For some reason, he takes a beating. He's not a real gunslinger. He likes to be safe, throw it underneath. He's kind of like that Kirk Cousins type. Those guys, we pick on those guys more than anyone else. We like our quarterbacks to be aggressive. You like Pat Mahomes slinging it all over the place and these no-look passes and sidearm deliveries. Even Matt Stafford. That's Stafford's style. He's a gunslinger. People love him for it. He's never won a big game, but people will cut him slack because, I don't know, he's got arm talent and he's aggressive and he's fun to watch. But the careful quarterbacks were always tougher on. Like a Kirk Cousins, a Jimmy Garoppolo. Because the belief is that they need more help because they're a little more conservative. That's Derek Carr. So I do think Carr is underrated, but I still slot him third. And then I put Drew Locke or Teddy Bridgewater, whichever one, in Denver, number four in the AFC West. In the NFC East, I think Dak Prescott is the best quarterback when healthy in that division. I don't think there's much of a debate. I think he's the only good quarterback in that division right now. And then I guess I would put Ryan Fitzpatrick second for Washington. Fitzpatrick, statistically, he's been a top eight quarterback the last 2 years based off of QBR. You probably wouldn't know it, but he's been really good. He was really good in Miami. The concern with Fitzpatrick is just trying to trust him. And he's hard to, even when he's playing his best, he is a gunslinger. He'll turn it over. He'll have a five turnover game for you. It's hard to count on him. I put him number two. But by year's end, he could be behind the next guy in the NFC East on my list, Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones, no more excuses. You got everything around you. You got a Pro Bowl running back. You got two Pro Bowl tight ends. You have a couple of good wide receivers. You have a solid offensive line. You had a top 10 defense from a year ago. You have a coach who seems like he's the right guy for the job. And I think Daniel Jones could take a real step forward this year. As of now, I slot him third, but I think he could leapfrog Fitzpatrick by Thanksgiving. And then Jalen Hurts, to me, is a clear number four. I think there's a wide gap between Hurts and the rest of the quarterbacks in that division. Another large reason why the Eagles will be one of the worst teams in the league this year. In the NFC North, Aaron Rodgers will be playing for the Packers this year, and he still will be the best quarterback in the division. Then I put Kirk Cousins number two. You may not like Kirk. I am a Vikings fan, but I have had a real love-hate relationship with Cousins. This is not me, you know, being biased. I'm trying to be fair. Kirk Cousins, statistically, since arriving in Minnesota, statistically has been actually a top six quarterback in a lot of stats. Go look up his numbers. I know he hasn't won enough big games, but he has played well. I put him number two. Then I really struggled. I ended up putting Jared Goff number three. He's been to a Super Bowl before. He's played. Number four is the Bears situation. Andy Dalton / Justin Fields. I think Justin Fields will have a better career than Jared Goff, but as of right now today, I put Goff three. I put Fields four. I don't even know when Justin Fields is going to get on the field. No pun intended there. I don't know when he's going to see the field. Week one? Week eight? Not at all this year? I don't know. So the Bears situation I put forth. In the NFC South, Tom Brady obviously number one. Then I go Matt Ryan two. If Jameis Winston is the starter for the Saints, I'll put him three. Sam Darnold, I put fourth. And if Taysom Hill is the starting quarterback for the Saints, he would be fifth. I think Taysom Hill is the worst option of that division, and the Saints are better off with Jameis Winston. And lastly, the NFC West. Jimmy Ward was just talking about the quarterbacks in that division. Russell Wilson's number one for me in the NFC West. Matt Stafford, I would put number two. I like his situation in L.A. I think he has a big year. Obviously, great arm talent. Has more talent around him now than ever before. Then I put Kyler Murray number three and Jimmy Garoppolo of those Niners last. I know he's been to a Super Bowl, right? Kyler, what has he won in the NFL? But I think he has a higher ceiling, certainly, than Jimmy Garoppolo. And this is year three for Kyler. We'll see if he takes a big step forward this season. Garoppolo, meanwhile, may be out of a job. That's how I would power rank quarterbacks by division. And if you want to win your division, if you want to be a playoff team, you probably have to be either number one or two on that list for your division. We'll wrap up your Monday afternoon when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Come on, neighbor. Yeah. Yo, this sound all right, though. Yeah. Yo, me and Koozie, yeah. this gonna be our new single. Yeah. And when you hear the story, you say it's all right, though. Yeah. Yo, Koozie, why'd you give me a cue?
Fun a funky finish to your Monday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Biz Markie actually passed away over the weekend at 57 due to complications from diabetes. He had not been doing well the last couple of years. So, thoughts and prayers to Biz Markie's family and the rapping community. Of course, he was known for his big hit, Just a Friend, back in the day. In tribute, I listened to it over the weekend. And he was known as like, he was considered, what do they call him, Clown Prince? He was a goofy guy, goofy rapper. That sounds like Tracy Morgan rapping, though, if you listen to Just a Friend. If Tracy Morgan wrote and rapped a song, it would be that one. But it's an iconic song. Unfortunately, Biz Markie passed away over the weekend. Quite a few from the hip-hop or rap community have passed away here in recent months.
So if they ever make a movie about this guy, Tracy Morgan would probably be the guy to play him,
I think,
right?
It would be pretty good. Now, Tracy would have to put on, I think, a few pounds.
Suits in Hollywood.
Well, that's true. He could do that. Hey, it depends what kind of actor you are. You know, like Christian Bale always gets into his role. He'll lose a lot of pounds or put it on. Like, what was it, American Hustle? He actually did get fat for that one, then lost it all for his next film. Anyways. Hey, before we go, we did so much yapping today. When you tell me that there's a chance for a handicap match between Bobby, Super Dave, and Jim, I'd rather devote all 3 hours to that if I could. So let me tell you before we go that if you have a problem around the house, the Canty Foundation Specialist can fix it. Give him a call, 843-484-3625, or find them online at CantyCanFixIt.com. Because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. CantyCanFixIt.com or call them, 843-484-3625. We'll get to the tradition in baseball that needs to come to an end. We'll do it on the show tomorrow. Plus, Coach Shane Beamer scheduled to talk with the media around 4 today for SEC Media Days. We'll react to that on the show tomorrow as well. Catch the show on demand. Find the podcast. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we have to say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.